Today on Wings, children sue government over climate change.
We're open to settlement discussions with the federal defendants if they're willing to come to the table, as long as it doesn't delay a resolution of the case. We'll be seeking documents and evidence from the federal government and from the fossil fuel industry interveners about their role in this problem and what the solutions are.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
July 30th, 2018, the U.S. Supreme Court unanimously refused to block a lawsuit brought by young people against the U.S. government for failing in its duty to act on climate change. The lawsuit seeks comprehensive science-based legislation to return atmospheric carbon dioxide to 350 parts per million by 2100. The case is scheduled to begin trial in an Oregon federal court on October 29, 2018. Today on Wings, you'll hear more about that case and some of the people involved.
My name is Kelsey Cascadia Rose Juliana. I'm 22 years old. I live in Eugene, Oregon. And when I was 14 years old, I co-filed a lawsuit against the governor of Oregon. Then when I was 19 years old, I sued the federal government.
Kelsey Juliana is the named plaintiff in the Young People's Climate Lawsuit against the United States. But she's only one of 21 plaintiffs, representing a substantial range of ages, races, home states, and genders. Since the case was first filed in 2015, the plaintiffs have gained experience in public speaking. Several spoke at a press conference in 2016, after fighting an attempt by the Obama administration to get their case thrown out of court. This girl is from Louisiana. She woke up one day to find her bedroom flooded. As she puts it, she stepped into climate change.
My name is Jenny Portland. I live in Marin, Louisiana, and I'm in the 8th grade. A few short weeks ago, I stepped out of my bed and into climate change. They called it a 1,000-year flood, but in Louisiana, we had that and 8 500-year floods in less than 2 years. As I... As I stand here, my home is a wreck. We had to take down the walls to stop the mold, and we had to pull out the carpet and flooring. We lost our furniture and... We lost our furniture and our belongings. Even most of my little brother's toys were destroyed. Climate change is harming my family now. The federal government has not done enough to protect anyone. Even after President Obama visited our flooded communities, he still allowed the selling of millions of acres of the of the Gulf of Mexico to oil and gas for future drilling. And the newly proposed plan, the government will sell more. Like the Jordan Cove pipeline plan, this would cause our planet to heat more and cause more floods where I live and disasters to other places as well. I don't want to see another family go through what we have experienced. 13 people died in the flood, many pets and animals too. Nobody should bury their loved ones simply because the government wants to bury their heads from the truth or because oil companies want to bury themselves in money. Thank you for listening to me. I'm human, I am real, I am a leader. I deserve a healthy and safe future, and I am saying that it is time for my government to realize that.
Thank you, Jayden. And now all the way from Eugene, Oregon, we have climate warrior Avery.
My name is Avery and I'm 11 years old. I would like to begin by saying thank you to all our friends and family, the Raging Grannies, 350.org, and my classmates at the Village School who have shown your support for something that is so important to me. I am aware that there are people out there who are saying things like, those kids don't know anything. I would like to tell you what this 11-year-old knows. I know that I love the earth and I know it is being threatened by rising temperatures. I know that I love salmon and they are being threatened by warming rivers. I know that the Mackenzie River is my source of drinking water and it comes from snowmelt. I know that I love snow and there's less of it in the Cascades. I know that I love snow leopards, elephants, and sea turtles, and many more who are being threatened by climate change. I know that one of the best things about the state of Oregon is the beautiful ocean and the life under the waves that's being threatened by ocean acidification. I know that I have a constitutional right to a stable climate. And I know that one of the government's jobs is to make sure that the future planet will be hospitable for generations to come. I know that I can't vote, but I know that I have a voice. I know that it is not my job, but I will do my part to secure the right for a healthy environment for those who follow me. Thank you.
Thank you, Avery. And now, from White Plains, New York, Victoria.
Hi. So, I'm Victoria, and at first I was going to talk to you guys about, like, really big stuff, like sustainable development and how many people there are on Earth and how important climate change. I'll do that. Yeah. Okay. So, so instead I was going to talk to you guys about, like, how happy I am. So basically, I'm happy because I'm here. I'm happy to be with my friends again, and I'm happy to be suing the U.S. federal government. I'm happy that there are millions of young people in this country rising against the status quo and the powers that be, and standing up to those who tell us that we can't carry on this earth for ourselves. Because if we can teach our parents to use our iPhones, I think that's not true. There's a lot going on right now that would suggest that I have no reason to be happy. The sea levels are rising, and the earth, which so gracefully houses us, has been betrayed by our dependence on fossil fuels. The United States federal government and the biggest coalition of fossil fuels in the world may have just sat feet away from me and tried to deny their responsibility for climate change, also known as the biggest threat to my future. But I don't really care, because they don't have that type of power over me. The most power that exists in this space and in the experience I've just had is standing behind me and all these people supporting this lawsuit. So that's why I'm happy, because I know that we're really powerful and we're making a huge change.
Thank you, Victoria.
After this appearance in 2016, Victoria Barrett went on to address the United Nations and the COP21 Climate Summit in Paris. On Wings, you're listening to coverage of the lawsuit titled Juliana versus the United States et al. The et al. Includes three major petroleum industry associations that chose to side with the U.S. government in trying to quash the case. After the Obama administration failed to get the lawsuit thrown out, the Trump administration tried repeatedly to do so. The government's case reads, "This suit is an attempt to redirect federal environmental and energy policies through the courts rather than through the political process by asserting a new and unsupported fundamental due process right to certain climate conditions." The lead attorney on the case, Julia Olson, did not buy the government's argument that court was not the right venue to seek change. She compared her case to the one that successfully brought the U.S. government to help end racial segregation of public schools in the 1950s. At that press conference after the government's first attempt to quash the case, Olson answered questions about what the discussion in court had been about.
So the parties for the plaintiffs and the federal defendants and the intervener defendants, who are the fossil fuel industry, we presented arguments on the defendants' attempt to get the case dismissed. They want it kicked out. We want to keep it. And so it was really about whether Judge Coffin's decision recommending that the court keep the case and deny the motions to dismiss, whether that should be affirmed by Judge Aiken. And my co-counsel would like me to point out a couple of charts. So central to my argument was showing that the federal defendants are truly responsible for causing the harm we're seeing with climate. They're responsible for a good chunk of the carbon dioxide that's in the atmosphere, and that they've known of this danger since, you can see, the mid-1950s. And I know it was shocking for me when I first discovered this, that they've known about this problem before I was even born. And the information has gotten, you know, more solid and more convincing over time, but they've had so much opportunity to deal with this, and they haven't. And instead, they have kept a fossil fuel energy system in place that benefits the fossil fuel industry and not the people. And you can see, I just want to be really clear, because there's a lot of misconception out there about what the Clean Power Plan does. This is what the Clean Power Plan does. It flatlines our emissions at high, dangerous levels. It does not do what the administration asserts that it does. And this is from the Department of Energy. So it is, the Clean Power Plan is a baby step to get rid of a little bit of coal, but it is not nearly enough. And so that was a lot of what the argument was about today.
The Clean Power Plan was an Obama administration measure. Since this press conference took place, the Trump administration repealed it. At this event in 2016, with Obama still in office, a reporter asked if the president's hands were politically tied.
And when I interviewed James Hansen, he said Congress hadn't done enough so far, and that's why the president is frustrated. Do you see the role of the district court, you know, having a lot of power, even though the government attorneys were saying essentially don't mess with the higher branches?
They aren't higher.
So, yeah, all three branches of government are, they're equal in our system of government. And so here's what the truth is. Congress, for decades, has enacted all kinds of laws that give the executive branch of government full authority to deal with this problem. They have all the authority they need in existing legislation. Okay, that's one thing. It's true that Congress would have to put a price on carbon through a carbon tax. That would be a legislative response. But you know how that happens? The executive branch needs to ask for it, right? They need to ask for it. But even without a carbon tax, which would be the sanest, fastest way to deal with this problem, as many people say, the executive branch has lots of tools, and they can start by stopping leasing our lands for fossil fuel extraction. They can stop approving permits for new pipelines and new infrastructure that supports the fossil fuel industry. And they can divert federal support away from fossil fuels and towards clean energy.
You are listening to Wings, and the topic is children suing governments to do much, much more about climate change. Let's switch gears now, leave the crowd sound behind, and listen to Julia Olson giving a deeper explanation of the work of our Children's Trust and its global implications. Here she's speaking by remote video link to the Positive Economy Forum, held in France in September 2016.
Thank you so much for having me. Bonjour. I'm sorry I can't be there in person. I am the executive director and founder of our Children's Trust, and I'm an attorney. I'm also a mother. And what our Children's Trust does is we elevate young people's voices around the world in taking action on climate change. We help them to bring legal actions against their governments, to compel science-based emission reductions that will actually stabilize the climate and protect our oceans. And we work with top experts around the world, like Dr. James Hansen and his colleagues, who are internationally renowned and working on the scientific prescription for how do we stabilize climate and avoid the severe ocean acidification that we face. And the work that we do as lawyers is, it's very campaign-based. We're trying to hold the world's governments accountable. Because right now, as many of you know, even with the Paris Agreement, there's not a binding enforcement mechanism for some of the most important countries, like the country I live in, the United States, which is the most responsible for causing the problem and is not doing nearly enough, and in fact is continuing to make the problem worse. So I want to give a little bit of background about the law that we use, because what we're doing is very different from what has been done in the United States for years and also in other countries. We are using two basic principles, legal principles. One is what is known as the public trust doctrine. It comes from ancient Roman law and the time of Justinian.
and it came to the United States through the King of England. And because it's found in the Roman Code, and it's also part of common law traditions, it applies and is found in legal systems throughout the world. And the public trust doctrine, it's a very simple concept that government is a trustee or a protector over vital natural resources like air and water and our climate system. And it must hold those resources in trust for the beneficiaries, who are the citizens, but not just present generations of citizens, but future generations as well. And there's a legal argument to be made that governments are violating the rights of the beneficiaries, the future generations. So that's part of the legal underpinning of the work that we're doing. And it really strikes at the heart of intergenerational justice. We also look for constitutional rights, fundamental rights, basic human rights that can be found in constitutions across the United States, but also abroad in other jurisdictions, that captures really the fundamental right that is at stake, especially for these young people. And so I want to tell you the story of the case against the United States in a moment. We just had a big hearing on Tuesday this week, which is why I'm not in France. And I'll go over that. I think it will capture the flavor of the work that we do. But I also want to let you know that we work in countries around the world. So right now we're working in Pakistan, Canada, the Philippines, Uganda, Australia, the United Kingdom, Bangladesh, Norway. There was a case just yesterday filed by young people in Sweden to try to prevent coal from being sold and burned elsewhere. And indeed, we're even working with lawyers in France and young people in France, and we're very excited about that. And we'll be going to Marrakesh to actually help train attorneys from the Middle East and North Africa to similarly bring this kind of strategic climate litigation. So we're hoping that this movement will grow and that we'll be able to support more young people and more attorneys around the world in really bringing those domestic enforcement cases that are so important. And we will continue to work closely with our partners in the Netherlands and Belgium. I'm sure many of you have heard of the great success of Urgenda and Roger Cox, who are close colleagues of ours.
Roger Cox and the Urgenda Foundation successfully sued the Dutch government to force them to create stronger climate change policies.
So to explain about the U.S. federal case, I represent 21 young people. Mm-hmm. They are ages now 9 to 20. They were 8 to 19 years old when we started the case. And Dr. James Hansen, who to me is one of the most amazing climate scientists on the planet, and has said that we can't allow CO2 levels to stay at their current level of over 400 parts per million. We need to bring them back down to 350 parts per million. And he has the prescription, the science-based prescription for doing that. He is also a plaintiff representing his granddaughter on the case and representing future generations. So the case is brought under the US Constitution for violating fundamental rights to life, liberty and property, and personal security. It's also brought under the federal public trust doctrine, which I explained. And what has happened in the case is we filed it about a year ago against the government. And one way we argue the case, one of the tests we have to show, is that our government has taken actions to put these young people's lives in danger, has created a dangerous situation for them. And then, with the full knowledge that that danger existed, they've continued to act in ways that will harm these young people and future generations. And they haven't done anything about it, or they've done very little about it, and I want to talk about that. The other thing that we're arguing is that young people are being discriminated against as a class, because they will, in fact, suffer far worse than the adult generation and generations that have preceded them, and that the economic benefits that are accruing to adults in the present generation, and particularly special interests like the fossil fuel industry, are to the disadvantage of an entire class of people. And this argument of equal protection under the law can also be found in constitutions around the world. and it's a powerful argument. So when we filed the case, the fossil fuel industry decided they wanted to intervene in the case's defendants. So we have three trade associations, the biggest in the world, American Petroleum Institute is one, and they represent all of the fossil fuel industry, Exxon, Mobil, BP, the Coke Industries, all of the big players are now defendants through these trade associations in our case, which means we have the United States sitting side by side with the fossil fuel industry defending a case against 21 young people and arguing that they don't have these rights to life and liberty and property and personal security in the face of climate change. So they've been arguing for the case to be dismissed. And we received one really wonderful decision, a big win last April from one judge who said the case should not be dismissed. It should go forward to the merits of the case. And on Tuesday, we were back in court for a second judge to review that initial decision. And we had hundreds and hundreds of people outside the courthouse. There were three courtrooms filled here in Oregon where the case was argued in federal court, and people filling courtrooms up the West Coast where they live streamed the hearing. And I just want to express how much public support there is for what these young people are standing up and doing and taking on the United States federal government. And it was an exciting day because we had a judge who was very well prepared. She had read all of the materials, and she really asked a lot of hard questions to our government attorney and to the fossil fuel industry. And I am optimistic that we are going to be moving forward to what will be an enormous trial in that case against the United States government and the fossil fuel industry. Some of the evidence that we're using and the story that goes behind this is we have evidence that the United States has known for over 50 years, since at least 1955, that by continuing to burn fossil fuels and emit carbon dioxide, we would be causing catastrophic, in fact, they used the word apocalyptic, impacts. They knew that the oceans would acidify in the 1950s. They knew that climate would be destabilized. They knew that the seas would rise and the ice sheets would melt. And yet, from the 1950s onward, with all this science in front of them, they chose to continue a national fossil fuel-based energy system. And here in the United States, as in many countries, it's actually government that controls those energy systems. And at least in the United States, we control the supply of our energy, we control the production, we lease much of our fossil fuels that we use from being extracted from our federal public lands. And then we permit and approve all of the pollution that comes out of that engine. And during the argument on Tuesday, I used the analogy of a coin. On one side is heads, and that's the energy system that governments dictate for their countries. And on the other side is tails, and those are the environmental agencies that are supposed to be controlling that pollution and limiting it, or whatever the body may be in a particular country. And that system, that coin, is ending up in the pocket of special interest groups like the fossil fuel industry to extreme costs to young people and future generations. And so what we really need is a big movement to hold domestic governments accountable for violating not only international laws, to the extent those can be used, but also domestic laws, constitutional rights, the public trust doctrine, and other mechanisms that apply across the world in many countries. So I want to leave you with one story, and it was a story I told on Tuesday. One of my plaintiffs is Jaden, and she lives in Rain, Louisiana. She's 13 years old. And on October 13th at 5 a.m., she woke up and she stepped out of bed and she was ankle deep in water. As she says, she woke up and she stepped right into climate change. Her house had a river of orange sewage and water flowing through it. It destroyed most of their possessions. The walls of their house are now contaminated. And that's one story that's happening all around the world. And so I just want to leave you with the hope that the young people bring and the power that we can have if we take these actions to court. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Julia Yelson. Thank you very much.
Julia Olson, attorney and founder of Our Children's Trust, speaking by remote video link to the Positive Economy Forum held in France in September 2016. Almost 2 years later, in July 2018, the U.S. Supreme Court gave the go-ahead for the Children's Climate Lawsuit to proceed in federal district court, and it is scheduled to be heard starting October 29, 2018. In March 2016, Olson already sounded confident that the case would be allowed to go to trial.
When we get that green light, we are moving full steam ahead. We're open to settlement discussions with the federal defendants if they're willing to come to the table, as long as it doesn't delay a resolution of the case. We'll be seeking documents and evidence from the federal government and from the fossil fuel industry interveners about their role in this problem and what the solutions are.
It is likely that the judge in October will be U.S. District Court Chief Judge Ann Aiken, who already rejected an appeal for dismissal and may have revealed an interest in arriving at a settlement. Julia Olson.
Right now, who's standing in our way? I would say the Department of Justice is standing in our way. I think what the court indicated today is she questioned them about, why are you fighting this so hard? If what President Obama says is true, that they see that this is a terrifying emergency, and if he believes that he wants to do something about it, he can sit down in a room with these plaintiffs and talk about a settlement of the case that would put the nation on the right trajectory away from fossil fuels and towards clean energy.
Okay, so many of y'all know this case is Juliana et al. Versus United States et al. And the Juliana in that, the short case site, is Miss Kelsey Juliana, and she's next.
Kelsey! Okay. Woo! If y'all just witnessed something amazing, I want you to say yeah! Standing here, all of these young people have felt the harms personally by climate change. And in the courtroom, we heard from the defendants and from Judge Aiken that this case refers to everybody with varying degrees of damage. We got that confirmation. It's true. We all have a stake in this case. And what we heard was incredible arguments witnessed before Judge Aiken. And I am super excited and motivated to continue this case forward, because all of you, wherever you're from, who love to live off your land and drink your water and breathe your clean air, you are in this case with Woo! Us.
Yeah. Audio for this program came through ourchildrenstrust.org, which has a great deal more information about children's climate lawsuits to share. Video of the press conference is credited to climatemobilization.org. The first clip of Kelsey Juliana was from the Mothers of Invention podcast. The program has been edited and narrated for Wings by me, Frieda Worden. Wings thanks our supporters, including your local community radio station, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, author of the book Forgiving, A Feminist Criticism of Exchange. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle is Cast. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.